All right, we're beginning here on the top of Pei Dalet Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara over here is really in search of the source for the fact that what we say about ayin tachat ayin and shein tachat shein is really mamon, is a monetary compensation and not the actual really eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. The Gemara is clear about where it wants to get. The Gemara knows that that is the right interpretation of the psukim, that it is mamon and not literally an eye for an eye. And therefore, the Gemara here is in search of the bridge between that. We know that the psukim or the pashtuta psukim sound like that it is an eye for an eye or leg for a leg, so on and so forth. So you have the pashtuta psukim, which is pushing you in a direction of taking it literally. You have the Torah Sheba'al Peh, which clearly says it's mamon. And the question is, how do we get from one to the other? And that's majority of today's daf is trying to figure out what the drusha is. You know, sometimes we have a drusha and we're trying to figure out what the drusha is. Here we know what we want. We're just trying to find the drusha that gets us from one to the other. And here the chachamim go through different iterations and explanations for how we get to that conclusion that it is mamon. And just as a reminder, we discussed this yesterday, that this type of language is used in three different places in the Torah. It's used in Parshat Mishpatim with regards to v'chinatzu anashim, where two individuals are fighting. Over there, it says, v'masoniye v'natata nefesh tachat nefesh, ayin tachat ayin, shein tachat shein, yad tachat yad, regel tachat regel, kviya tachat kviya, petza tachat patza, chabura tachat chabura. So over here you have a list of items where it sounds like that there is this literal quid pro quo, where if you do damage to a person, then the same happens to you. In Sefer Vayikra and Parshat Emor, we also have a similar thing that, again, we did in yesterday's daf a lot. We focused on these psukim, and they'll come up again today, which is Ish kiten mum bamitoka shasa ken yaselo, shever tachat shever, ayin tachat ayin, shein tachat shein, kasheiten mum ba adam ken inaten bo. And then we have a third sequence in Dvarim with regards to Edim Zomimim. By Edim Zomimim, it says, Vasitem lo kasher samam lasot achiv, and biata ra mikibrecha. And then it goes on another two psukim later and says, Velo tachos einecha, nefesh benefesh, ayin ba'ayin, shein b'shein, yad b'yad, regel b'rogel. So you have it three times in the Torah that you have this sequence of eye for an eye or something for something that seems to indicate that it should be taken literally. Obviously, the fact that it's mentioned three times means that we have extraneous use of language over here, or unnecessary use of language. Some of that will be actually be part of the proofs that we will see today. Some of that leads to gzerot shavot, and some of that leads to limudim from those items. So that's what we're going to focus on today. We're on to a brayta. Yesterday we started with the first brayta, now we're on to a second brayta, and it says, Tanya Yidach, we have another brayta, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, Ayin tachet ayin, mamon. So you know that that's his conclusion already. That's how the brayta starts. Then the brayta is going to backpedal and try to figure out how he got to that conclusion that ayin tachat ayin means that there's monetary compensation. Ata omer mamon, o eno ela ayin mamash. How do you know that it's monetary compensation? Maybe it literally means an eye for an eye. Hare. So he says that is not a possible explanation of the pasuk. Shaya suma. If the person was already blind, and then visime, and he goes ahead and then blinds someone else. So in that scenario, how exactly are you going to accomplish ayin tachat ayin if the person is already blind? If the person is kiteya, vikiteya, if he's already missing an arm, and then he cuts off someone else's arm, or he's a chiger, vichiger, and then he causes someone to lose their leg or to limp, heich ani bikayim ze ayin tachat ayin. How do then we accomplish ayin tachat ayin? Meaning that the person who afflicted or did the damage already is missing this limb, already has this problem. So then there's no way to accomplish a eye for an eye with that individual. But then it won't be even, because then you don't end up with a person who's in the same situation as the previous individual. And you're trying to replicate in this individual what the other one has. It's not just that you cut off their arm, the resultant person now is a one-armed person. If you cut off the other arm of this individual, then he's a person who has no arm. So then that's not an equal punishment. V'Torah Amra, and the Torah said, we read this again in Vayikra yesterday, Mishpat Echad Yelechem, that there has to be a single law or a single way to deal with this issue for everyone, a matter of equality. Mishpat Hashaveh L'Kulchem, everybody has to have the same outcome of the din. Where it says, Amrei, we can deal with that. My kushya. Why is that a question? Dilma hecha de efshar, efshar. Where it's possible, and we will execute on it. Hecha de lo efshar, lo efshar. If it's impossible to execute on it, then we won't do patrinin night, and then we have to let him go. We aren't able to prosecute him in those situations. Meaning that there are two possible outcomes over here. One outcome is that we'll carry out the psukim literally, eye for an eye, leg for a leg, so on and so forth, that we will take the psukim literally. If we can't accomplish it, because the person's already missing an eye, already missing an arm, then we won't be able to accomplish it, and we won't be able to bring that person to prosecution. We won't be able to carry out the din, and he'll be patur. And the Gemara is fine with that as being mishpata shaveh l'kulchem. That is the same din for everyone, because as long as we can accomplish it, we will do it. If we can't accomplish it, of course they are patur, because we can't do anything about it. And the Gemara says, ilo temahochi, if you do not allow for that to be considered a mishpat echad, then treifa shaharagat ha-shalim, if you have a treifa, treifa means someone who has a congenital or problem that happened that will not allow them to live more than 12 months, then if they kill et ha-shalim, someone who was fine and healthy, mayav dinan le, then what do we do about that? Because in that case, we cannot prosecute him, we cannot bring him to din. Rashi says that the problem is the fact that the treifa cannot have edim testify against him because it's edut she'i ata yechola zima. One of the qualifications for edim to be considered kosher edim, witnesses in these cases, is the fact that they could actually be caught in their words and then be taken to task for trying to cause or prosecute someone in a certain manner. So if they're causing the death of someone, then we do a sitim lo kasher zamam lasot. They will be put to death instead. Over here, where they testify against the treifa, even if they were quote-unquote successful at killing him, they would not be chayav because they killed someone, in essence, who is a walking dead person already. He's a treifa. Someone's going to die already. So therefore, when they testified against him, they can't do a sitim lo kasher zamam lasot because we wouldn't kill them for their attempt to kill him. That's the case, it's an edut that can never be brought to hazama. That's the case, it's not a kosher edut. In that case, we can never bring a prosecution or bring this person to trial because we'll never have witnesses that can testify to it. Again, if it had possibly happened in front of the dayanim, maybe we could deal with it. But if we require witnesses, it won't work. That's how Rashi explains it. The other possibility is part of what we discussed yesterday, the idea of that maybe even within life, life is not just binary. There is life and no life, but there is an aspect of quality of life here. Again, we won't speak about it in a more generic sense of quality of life, but here in this particular instance where the person's already classified as dead, then their life is different than the taking the life of another individual. And so therefore, even if you were to punish this individual, it would not be an equal punishment because they killed someone who had a full life and a full nefesh. The one that you are then going to bring to trial, you can't prosecute him, you cannot execute on him the death penalty that will be of an equal nature because he's not really alive in that sense. So what do you say, ma'ab dinan? So in that case, what are you going to do? El hecha de efshar efshar. When there is a murderer that we can bring to trial, we will. Hecha de lo efshar lo efshar. In a case where there is a murderer that we can't bring to trial, we won't do patrinin leh, and he will get away with it, and we won't be able to prosecute him. So that would not be a violation of mishpat echad. It won't be a violation of everybody having the same mishpat. Now, your question's a fair question, because then you really give me a carte blanche to these individuals who have this problem. Then they can just go out and go and chop everybody's arms off. They can go ahead and kill people because they are not going to be prosecuted. It's obvious the Beit Din will intercede here. Then we may not give them the death penalty, but we might incarcerate them. We may not cut their arm off, but we will possibly incarcerate them or do things that are, call them extrajudicial, in order to prevent them from doing this or acting in this way. We're not just going to let them walk around and do as they please. It's clear that the courts will intercede in an extrajudicial manner to stop individuals from acting this way. But in terms of the Kavadin, in terms of what will happen to Oraita, there will be only these two options. One is that either you carry it out literally, or the person is patur. And that'll be the line, at least, mido Oraita. So again, that proof doesn't work. Now, the nature of many of these proofs, and really underlying all of this, and we're going to see this over and over again with the proofs that have come through today's daf, is the problem of inequality. which is that you can never really replicate. When it comes to issues like chavalah in another person, it's very hard to replicate exactly the scenario or situation that was perpetrated on the other individual on the one who was the mazik or the mechabel. And so for that reason, that's really the underlying current here and the really explanation for why it has to be monetary compensation, because there's no way to replicate the same situation that was done in the crime scene. And that's what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai tried to suggest over here. The Gemara rejected it. But we're going to have other attempts that use that same idea to try to get to this conclusion. The Beit Rabbi Shmuel Tana Makra, Kein Inatein Bo, Ven Itina El Mamon. We discussed this yesterday in Parshat Emor. It says, Shever tachat shever, ayin tachat ayin, shein tachat shein, kasheit itein mum ba'adam, kein yinatein bo. And we mentioned yesterday that the idea of nitina is something that's natan miyad biyad, something given hand to hand, which means mamon. That's what Tan Debei Rabbi Shmuel, Debei Rabbi Shmuel says over here. The pasuk says, kein yinatein bo, ayin nitina lebamon. When you give something, that's monetary compensation. You don't give the removal of an arm, you give something like money. Elamiato, if that's the case, then how do you explain the first part of the pasuk? The first part of the pasuk says, Kasher yitein mum ba'adam, keini natein bo. That you're also going to say is mamon, hachanami de mamonu. You're going to say that, well, that's a monetary injury. Once you've taken the pasuk out of its literal meaning, and now you're giving it some sort of allegorical meaning, then the first part of the pasuk you can read that way too. Kasher yitein mum ba'adam. That means that it's a nitina. You did monetary damage to him. Can't even tell bo, and therefore there'll be monetary compensation. So Amrei, the Bei Rabbi Yishmael, Kroy Yitera Darshe. No, they're not being doraged just directly from the word nitina, but rather from the fact that this whole pasuk is completely extraneous. Michde Dichtiv, it says beforehand, again, we noted this yesterday in the chiastic structure of Emor, it says, V'ish ki ten mum ba'amito kasher asa ken ya'aselo. So we already have a pasuk that tells us exactly this information. Keni natein bo lomali. The pasuk that comes afterwards that succeeds this pasuk of shever tachat shever, then why do we need it? Lomali. Shmamina, that extraneous pasuk comes to teach you mamon. Then the Gemara says, okay, I understand that's for keni natein bo, kasher yitein mum ba'adam lomali. How come you need the opening pasuk? I did the bay michtav keni natein bo, katavnani kasher yitein mum ba'adam. It's really a parallel structure or really context. It's giving you the context of what the Keni Natein Bo is. Kasher Yitein Mum Ba'adam, Keni Natein Bo. If you just wrote Keni Natein Bo, technically you would have been able to learn it out, but it would have made it harder to understand the context. When you started out or open with the phrase Kasher Yitein Mum Ba'adam, Keni Natein Bo, that is an easier way than to have context or understanding what the Keni Natein Bo is. But for this, the Tana Debei Mishmal conclude that the Nitina is a nitina of mamon. And therefore, the nitina tells us that this isn't literally an eye for an eye, but rather compensation. The Beit Rabbi Chiya Tano. So here we have the Beit Midrash Rabbi Chiya, or the Bright of Rabbi Chiya, explaining it this way. Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Yad Biyad. This is the Pasuk by Edim Zomamim, which says over there, Lo tachos einecha nefesh b'nefesh, ayin b'ayin, shein b'shein, yad b'yad, regel b'rogel. So he's quoting the yad b'yad. Davar nitan miyad liyad. Something that's given from hand to hand. Again, we see this in other drashot of Chazal, that refers to metalkalim or to mamon, mani u'mamon. That's monetary compensation. Elamiato, Gemara says, okay, that's very good. You explained yad b'yad. Then what are you going to do? Regel b'rogel. It's also in that pasuk. Nami achi who? Well, you're going to say the same drusha there. It's something that's given from foot to foot. That doesn't make so much sense. Amre debe Rabbi Chiya kray yetera kadarshi. No, they're being doresh, the extraneous language over here. Michtei ktiv, the pasuk says, basitem lo kasher zamam lasot achiv. It already says two psukim earlier that you do to the witnesses what they plan to do to their brother, meaning to the person they're trying to get into trouble. Isak datcha mamash. If you took that literally and say an arm for an arm, then yad biyad lamali. Then what do I need the yad biyad for? Yad biyad would be a derivative of asitim lo kasher zamam lasot achiv. You wouldn't need yad biyad. So we know that the yad biyad, which is extraneous here, comes to teach you that it's monetary compensation and not physical retribution. Regel barogel lamali. But then you have to explain to me, okay, regel barogel is also extraneous. Aydi dechtiv yad biyad katav nami regel barogel. It wrote yad biyad, so it also wrote that balance of regel barogel. Right, that isn't so easy because the pasuk includes also nefesh benefesh, ayin ba'ayin. So the necessity to write all of these items isn't clear. The only one that we really need here is yad biyad to teach us this. The Gemara learns other drashot from other parts of the pasuk, but the yad biyad would be necessary. I'm not sure why you would have to write regel beragel afterwards. But nevertheless, the Beit Rabbi Chiya says that's just extraneous language of yad biyad. Plus, regel beragel is also extraneous, but we don't learn anything out from it. It's just keeping a style in the pasuk. Abaye Amar Atya Meditani de Bei Chizkiya. We can learn it out from the Brit of the Bei Chizkiya, or the Beit Midrash Bei Chizkiya, the Tanya, the Bei Chizkiya. Ayin tachet ayin, nefesh tachet nefesh, velo nefesh v'ayin tachet ayin. So he goes to the psukim that are found in Parshat Mishpatim. It says ayin tachet ayin, shein tachet shein, yad tachet yad, regel tachet regel. So again, that might have been what drove the previous limud, that you have yad and regel over here, so too over there it says yad and regel. But here you have a pasuk that says ayin tachet ayin, and the previous pasuk says v'masoni even atata nefesh tachet nefesh. So what he's saying is that yes, death is met with death, an eye is met with an eye. The problem is here that if you do take it literally and take out the person's eye, you're not necessarily going to end up with a situation which does that, because isakadatcha mamash. If you think it's literal, zimnid mishkachla ayin v'nefesh tachet ayin. You will end up in a scenario where the person's being penalized by losing his eye and his life over knocking out someone else's eye. The Bahadi the Avirle, because when Beitin goes to carry out or execute the punishment of blinding him, Nafikle Nishmate, he dies in that process. So therefore you end up with an unequal nature in the punishment. You were trying to take in an eye because he took out an eye. But in the meantime, you end up causing him to lose his life, which is much more extreme punishment than would be necessary. Mar says, my kushya, why is that difficult? Dilma meimad amdinale. We assess his capabilities beforehand. Imatzi mekabel, if he's able to handle the taking out of the eye of Dina, then we do it. Ilo matzi mekabel, if he's unable to deal with it, lo avdina, we won't do it. Viamdina dematzi mekabel. Where it says, okay, fine, let's assess the fact, and we figure out that he could deal with it. And then we end up doing it, and he actually loses his life. Then you actually end up with an uneven situation, even though you assess the situation, thought he could handle it, and then he doesn't able to handle it. Gemara says, if he dies, let him die. Because we have a principle that is established with regards to makot, with regards to corporal punishment, that mi la tanan gabe malkot, don't we have this mishnah by malkot, amdu, if they assess the amount of malkot that he could handle, umei tachet yado, and he dies during the lashes, patur, then the shliach beitin is patur, the one who's carrying out the punishment is patur, because the beitin assessed him for a certain level of punishment. Once they've done that assessment, if he dies at the hand of the person carrying out the punishment, that is not liable for that. And that is something where, for whatever reason, the assessment either was wrong, or even the assessment was right. Something happened here that caused him to die. But we don't hold you liable for that. So the same thing here. If they assess that he's able to have his eye poked out without dying, but when it happens, he actually does die, then we won't hold you liable. It's as if the death is not associated with the poking out of the eye. And so for that reason, we would have thought originally, maybe there's a problem here, because if you take out the eye, you might end up with a punishment that's greater. The Gemara says, no, we can assess that beforehand, and we can make sure that we only take out the eye of the individual if he can withstand that and won't die from it. So again, that's not a proof that there's a problem with the punishment over here. All right, now the Gemara tries another. Rav Zvid Mishmei Durova Amar, Amar Kral, the Pasuk says, Petza Tachat Patza. So here again, the Gemara is using the Pasuk that's found in Mishpatim, which is the last Pasuk in that section, Kviya Tachat Kviya, Petza Tachat Patza, Chabura Tachat Chabura. So he says, well, if I have the Pasuk of Petza Tachat Patza, which teaches me, Litein Tsar B'Makom Nezek, to tell you that even when you pay for damage, you also have to pay for the pain above that. If you think we take the psukim literally, an eye for an eye, then just like the person who was originally injured had pain, but then so too does the person who you are punishing, he will also suffer that same pain when his eye is removed. So therefore you have now an equality in the tsar, so why would you have to pay or make compensation for the tsar? It says in my kushtia, Dilma ika inish dimifanik itlay tsarotve. There's some people who are more particular or have a lower threshold for pain, and therefore the pain is much greater for them. Ika inish dilomifanik lay tsaro. And there's some people who are not so particular or have a higher threshold for pain, and therefore it's not as much pain for them. Where it says the might nafkamino. Okay, that might be the case, but what does it make a difference? Where it says the mitve lay hech the beni to pay the differential. I mean, that's what the pasuk maybe is telling you, that you literally carry out the punishment, and then we assess the pain that the injured person suffered versus the pain of the person that we are executing, and then we decide if there's a difference or differential in that amount. And if there was more pain to the injured party, then we compensate in order to make it equal. And that's what the tsar was speaking about here, not about mamon, but making up the differential in the physical pain suffered. Rav Papa Shmid the Rav Amar, Amar Krav, Rapo Yirape, there that you have to pay the medical bills, Litain Rufu Abe Makom Nezek, to say that you pay medical bills even though you're paying for the Nezek. Vizlakadat Chamamash, if you think it's literal, Kehi Dehai Bai Asya, Hainami Bai Asya, just like the injured victim requires doctors and medical treatment, so too now the person you're executing will require that same medical treatment. So then, why do you have to pay for medical bills? My kushya, Dilma ika de salik bisrei hai. Some people, the wound heals quickly. Ika de lo salik bisrei hai. And some don't heal so quickly. It takes a much longer time to heal. So again, you won't necessarily end up with a situation of equality. So Gemara says, the mai nafkamina. So why does that make a difference? The meitiv lehech, the beni beni. Again, to pay the differential in the doctor bills. Meaning that, yes, he'll get an exemption for the doctor bills that he will have to undertake to cure himself. But if it's less than that which he costs the victim, he'll have to pay that excess amount to the victim. And that's the medical bills that we're speaking about here. And you can't prove that that's talking about mamon. Gemara says, Rav Ashi Amar. So Rav Ashi goes down a totally different path. Until now, all of the drashot revolve around a similar framework. Here, Rav Ashi takes a step out and does it totally different. For that reason, Tosfot goes out of his way to explain here by Rav Ashi why nobody else accepted Rav Ashi's limud. Rav Ashi Amar, Atya Tachat, Tachat, Mishor. We're learning out the word Tachat, Tachat, Xerishover from Shor. Divacha, Ayin, Tachat, Ayin. Here it says an eye for an eye. Divotam, and it says, Bai, Vichi, Gof, Korish, or Ish, et Shor, Re'eu. There, when it talks about a Shor attacking another Shor, at the end there, when it says you pay it back, it says, Ba'alav, Shalem, Yishalem, Shor, Tachat, Hashor, Vameti, Elo. So the word Tachat is used over there. There, it's clearly talking about compensation when you're replacing the Shor. And so, too, the tachat tachat, the Gezer Shav tells us that ayin tachat ayin is also about compensation. Malalan mamon, afkan mamon. Where it says, my chazit, the alif tachat tachat mishor. Why are you learning out tachat tachat as a Gezer Shav from shor, and alif tachat tachat meadam? Why don't you learn out the word tachat from a person themselves, dichtiv? The pasuk says there, v'natan tata nefesh tachat nofesh. Again, the psukim in shmot, sevi masoni, yevin atata nefesh tachat nofesh. There it sounds like, literally, it's a life for a life, and there the case tachat is literal. It's not mamon, it's literal. Malalan mamash, just like over there, it's literal. Afkan mamash, so too the ayin tachat ayin, and the subsequent pasuk should also be taken literally. Amrei, danin nizakin min nizakin, vein danin nizakin min mita. Makes sense to draw a gzera shava from nezek, which is by shore that injured another shore, to nezek over here, where we're speaking about ayin tachat ayin. Vein danim nizakin, we don't talk about nezek, which is an ayin tachat ayin, and learn it out, mimita, from nefesh tachat nefesh. It says, adarabo, danim adame adame, danim adame beema. Again, like we saw yesterday, there's still an advantage in learning nezek from mita, and the fact that one case you're talking about a human being, and the other case you're talking about a human being. In the gzera shava that you're trying to make, you're learning out a human being from a behema. Those aren't equated properly, and it makes more sense to learn from a human being to another human being. And so for that reason, we would have thought that tachat tachat is taken literally. And that upends Rav Ashi's limud over here. Tosvot, again, suggests why nobody else went down this route of Rav Ashi is, v'sharo morai savrei da'otak gzera shavali in meitav. They had another way, another reason to use that gzera shava to learn out the meitav that you have to pay with meitav. And so therefore, they didn't have this ability or opportunity to learn in the similar manner that Rav Ashi does because they've already used up that gezeira shava. Then Rav Ashi offers another alternative. El amar Rav Ashi mitachad asher ina yaliflei. You learn it out from the punishment in the Torah for rape. It also does with subduction as well. That you have to pay mitachad asher ina because he caused the woman pain. He afflicted her sexually. Therefore, he has to make compensation. So there you see, there is compensation made for physical pain or damage that was caused. Adam me Adam, unizakim me nizakim. Over there, you're learning from a situation of a human being doing damage to another human being doing damage. I mean, ayin tachad ayin, from the tachad asherina, that gzer shavah. Number two, it's talking about nezek. And Nezek. So here you have an ability to learn that Gzer Shava of Nezek and Adam to teach you that it's monetary compensation and not literally Ayin Tachad Ayin. So Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ayin Tachad Ayin Mamash. Here we have a first opinion that wants to take the Torah literally. Ayin Tachad Ayin means literally an eye for an eye. It says, Mamash Sakadatcha? How could you think that? Rabbi Eliezer, Leitle Kohan Chani Tana'eh? Eliezer leaves this Mesorah that everybody else has. Again, here you see that it's clear to the Gemara where they want to end up. It's a question of how we get there. And the Gemara assumes that there is such a Mesorah that it's a monetary compensation and not literally an eye for an eye. And so it was implausible to them that Rabbi Eliezer would have such an opinion. So now the Gemara has to amend Rabbi Eliezer's statement in order to deal with it. So Amar Rava Lomar she'en shemino toke evid, that you do not assess him like a slave. Amar le'abaye, what does it mean you don't assess him like a slave? Ela keman, who are you going to assess him like? Keben chorin, like a free person? Ben chorin mit le demay. When it comes to a free person, they don't have value. The whole reason why in their day it was easier to make these assessments was because they had human auctions where they were selling slaves. Whenever you could assess the present value of the damage that's done. But if you're talking about a ben chorin, if you're talking about free people, there's no way to assess the damage done to this individual. You can't get to a monetary assessment of the damage unless you talk about it in the terms of slaves. So the Gemara says, Elam Ravashi lomar ain't shamim lato benizak ela b'mazik, to teach you that you do not assess it based on the injured party, but rather based on the person who caused the injury, the one who did the damage, the mechabel over here. So this, as Tosfot says, is akin to the machloket that we saw in Kofar earlier in the Masechta. When it says with regards to a shor mu'ad that kills someone that you have to pay kofar, the balim of the shor pay kofar, what do they pay the kofar? Ben nizak u ben demazik. Are they paying for the value of the person that was killed, in essence replacing their life with this monetary compensation? Or is it assessed by the mazik's life because he's really getting kapara? In essence, he is paying money to attain atonement for that which he did. And the one that he needs to redeem is himself. The one who's supposed to die here is then given the opportunity through Rachamim to redeem himself. And similarly over here, is he paying for Ben Nizak, meaning that we assess the injured party and he's making compensation or restitution for it? Or is it really that he should lose his eye over here? But we allow him the dispensation, instead of losing his eye, to pay for it. Mean that pay for his own eye to save his own eye. And that is what the ayin tachet ayin means here. It is monetary compensation, but it's monetary compensation that assesses the individual's eye. And that's what Tosfot says over here. He says it's akin to that case of kofar. If you say the kofar is b'menazik shaminan, the same thing over here. If you say ayin tachet ayin, it's similar genre of thought. This idea that the redemption or the payment of kofar is really to buy the person's loss out. To buy out, whether they were supposed to lose their life to buy that out, whether they're supposed to lose a limb to buy that out. And that actually would work well with the drusha that we saw in the Braita yesterday, which was that the Braita was midayek from the Pasuk in Bamidbar that says, Lo tichu kofer the nefesh rutzeach, asher rasha lamut ki mot yumat. There the Braita was midayek, that's only the nefesh rutzeach. You're not allowed to take kofer, but you're allowed to take kofer for roshei avarim. There you weren't allowed to pay to stop the murderer from being put to death. But you are allowed to pay for the party that did the damage to not lose their eye. And so therefore the compensation would be for the person who did the damage is a limb to be saved. And that's the way or the nature of the compensation. And that's what Rabbi Lezer's Mechadesh is, that we look at the Mazik and not at the Nizak. Okay, how Chamra, the Kati Yodu the Yenuka. There was this donkey that took off the arm of a young child. Probably the fact that it was a young child is what allowed the arm to be pulled off, because generally the donkeys are not carnivorous animals. They don't bite off people's arms. But again, they have a strong bite. And if you're dealing with a small child or an infant, it makes sense that possibly he could have detached the arm of the baby. After the Kamedar of Papa, Bar Shmuel, they brought the case to Papa Shmuel. Amar lo zilu shumale arba'ad varim. You have to pay the four things. Why do you have four things? There are five things that you have to pay. So he says, I'm talking about the four things beyond Nezek. You have to pay for the Nezek, plus the additional four items on top of that, which is Nezek, Tsar, Ripo, and Boshet. It's a donkey. Why are you paying Arba Dvarim or Chamisha Dvarim if we're talking about a donkey? And we know that from earlier in the Masechta, that when it comes to injury done by your possessions or your ownership, you only pay for Nezek, you don't pay for the Arba'a Dvarim on top of the Nezek. So as Rashi notes over here, and Tosfot says over here, it's clear that when Rav Papa Bar Shmuel got the case, he had no idea that it was a donkey that took off the arm of the baby. And again, the fact that donkeys usually don't take off the arms of people made it even more of a scarce situation. And therefore, he made an assumption that when he saw the baby, that it was taken off by another individual. And that's why he was saying that you have to pay the four or five. So then, once a buyer already points out to him that it's a donkey, Amar lohu zilu shumale niske. Go and assess the damage that's done here. Vaha ka'avda bailim shayme. Don't you have to assess him like a slave? The nature of this question is very difficult. Amar lohu zilu shayme ka'avda. Go ahead and assess him like a slave. Seems to be an obvious point here in the Gemara, because we already saw before, as the Bai noted, that how are you going to assess him, like a Ben Chorin? There is no assessment of value when it comes to a Ben Chorin. The only way to assess values is Ka'avda, is like a slave. We're going to have a case like this further on. The nature of the question was connected to the subsequent Gemara. We're going to see that it's not so simple that you can collect on this type of item. And that might have been the tension here in the questioning, which is, don't you have to assess him like a slave? And if you do that, it's something that may not be able to be collected or adjudicated in Bavel. And that might be the answer to the question is, I don't hold like that. I think that you can collect for this item. Again, it might be referencing the subsequent case over here. It says, go ahead and assess him like an Eved. I don't want to do that. Zile be milta. Because it's beneath its dignity, or it would be too embarrassing to have him go be assessed like a slave or sold on the slave market. As Tosfot says over here, there is embarrassment here. There is boshet here. He's old enough already where there's a certain amount of embarrassment, or he's afraid of the public exposure from this. And therefore, father didn't want to do this. Amulei v'haka mechayvet leili yinoka. Wait a minute, how can the father make this assessment and cause a loss to the child? The father doesn't have a right to make that decision at the expense of the child. The child now will not get compensated or not get the restitution because the father refuses to have him assessed like a slave. Amar lahu, the father says, I will, when he grows up, I will pay out of pocket to satisfy him. Or basically, the child, when he gets older, is going to sue the father for not getting the compensation when he could have gotten the compensation. And then the father is either going to have to make that restitution or settle with the child for the fact that he didn't do the proper thing at that time because it was too embarrassing or he didn't feel comfortable with it. But whatever the reason is, since he didn't close the issue properly, the son will have a taina against the father, and then the father will have to settle with the child in order to resolve that issue. Ha'utora da'alis yadei d'inoka. There was this ox that bit off or chewed off the arm of a child. After the kamei derava, amrulei zilu shaymu kavdo. Go assess him like an evit. Amrulei, so they said back to him, v'hamarhu damar kol nishom ke'evit in govino to bevavel. Aren't you the one who says that anybody who is assessed like an evit does not get collected in Bavel, meaning the courts can't enforce such a punishment? So here, again, this was what I referenced before. That might have been the back and forth that was in that previous case about avdo, whether you can actually do this in Bavel or not. Don't you have to assess him like a slave? And he goes, yes, go ahead and assess him like a slave. Seems like the questioner is saying, if you have to assess him like a slave, then there's nothing to collect over here. And then Rapapa Bar Shmuel is saying back, no, go and assess him as a slave. I don't agree with this point that you can't collect this in Bavel. But Rava is clearly of an opinion here that you can't collect these things in Bavel. And then how does he then say, go and assess him like a slave? Now, the reason we need to do the assessment is if he then goes and grabs the money. Rashi claims that this is a preemptive assessment of the damage that is done. And that preemptive assessment will let us know that if later on the victim grabs property or gets a hold of property of the person that did the damage, then he'll be able to keep it up to the amount that we've assessed the damage as. So we assess the damage now, even though we can't collect it, because Beit Din can't enforce it, but it will help us in assessing if later on the victim grabbed property as to whether he took too much or too little property. That's the way Rashi learns it. The Rosh over here has difficulty with Rashi's explanation only because why would, if we say to eat tafas is not a suggestion of Beit Din to go out and grab the other person's property. It's an after the fact, bidyavat. If you did grab the other person's property, if you confiscated it somehow, then you don't have to give it back. Again, because motzi mechaver olav araya, now that you have it in hand, then you don't have to give it back. But why would we set up a scenario or a situation in which Beit Din is preemptively assessing the amount that this guy can go and grab, bidyavat? So the Rosh takes it the other way. It's di tofas. If he's already grabbed it, and Beit Din now needs to make an assessment, this is the way they make the assessment, having be assessed as an eved in order to determine if he took too much or he has to give some back to the owners. Where it says, Rova l'tame, Rova is the shitato. Dama Rova, nizke shor b'shor. Nizke shor b'adam, govim oto b'vavel. In cases of animal-to-animal damage, or a person that damages a shor, basically it's the damage of a person's property, then we do collect or adjudicate those cases in Bavel. Nizke adam b'adam, when you talk about chavala, a person injures another person, nizke adam b'shor, or a person is injured by a shor, ein govin oto b'bavel. That we cannot collect in Bavel. Maishna nizke adam b'adam v'nizke adam b'shor. What is different about chavalot between person to person or a shor to a person, delo, that we do not collect it in Bavel? Mar says, Elohim de'inan v'leka. We need judges that are smuchim, which the term in Parshat Mishpatim for that is Elohim. And Elohim means you need a judge that is musmach. And that applies, what we think now, to the whole Parshia over there. Anything to do with Nezek over there requires that type of judge. And we don't have that. Mar says, Niske shor b'shor, b'shor b'adam nami. When it comes to damage from animal to animal, possession to possession, or a person injures a shor, also over there, Elohim ba'inan, we also require smuchim over there, v'leka, you don't have it. So why is there a difference between these cases? Elamaishna shor b'shor, b'shor ba'adam, dishlichutayu ka'avdinan. When it comes to a case of possession to possession damage, shor of shor, or a person injuring a shor, over there, we adjudicate based on being messengers of the smuchim in Eretz Yisrael. We're doing their bidding or carrying out the adjudication on their behalf. Similar to what we say in the beginning of Masechet Sanhedrin with regards to how we have batei dinim that are not smuchim adjudicate cases. The cases that they're allowed to adjudicate are hoda'ot v'halva'ot. The way Rashi explains it over here, and as well as the Masechet Sanhedrin, is that halva'ot are loans, outstanding loans, and hoda'ot are where he has witnesses to the fact that the individual admitted to something or said something, and now he's trying to enforce whatever that admission was. Rashi seems to connect the two and say it was that he admitted to borrowing the money or not paying the money back. The Tosafot in Sanhedrin discusses why he doesn't necessarily like what Rashi is saying and has a different definition of hodot or avot. But we'll deal with that when we get to the beginning of Sanhedrin. So those two things, we allow the batei dinin in Bavel to adjudicate these cases because we assume that they are acting on behalf of the Beit Din in Eretz Yisrael. So adam ba'adam v'adam b'shor. When you're talking about chavalot, or you're talking about a shor that damaged an adam, namishlichutayu ka'abdinan. Why don't we say the same thing over there, that we are doing their bidding, we're acting as their messengers, mida d'hava udot v'alvot. Similar to Odot Vahot, we're acting on their behalf. When do we do or act on their behalf? Is in items where we are clear about the payment. But where it's not clear, we do not act on their behalf. So what that seems to mean is that in terms of our ability to adjudicate the case, then, when we don't have to determine the halachic outcome, but rather the facts of the case, over there we will act on behalf of the Batei Dinim in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, by Hoda'ot V'Hal Va'ot, we just have to establish the facts. Once we've established the facts, the outcome is clear, which is that it's a Hoda'ah or Hal Va'ah, and then the person will owe the money. On the other hand, when you're dealing with cases that involve assessments of damage or the determination of how to assess the damage and whether there was damage that's done, in those situations, we're not talking about some objective owing of money once we establish the facts, but we also have a psak halacha that is involved over here or required over here in order to get to the point where we say that this person is chayav to pay the nezek or chayav to make compensation. So therefore, that's what the Gemara says here. Mide de kimle begavei, things where the payment is obvious and almost logically an extension of what happened, over there, we act on their behalf and we adjudicate the case to establish the facts. Things where it's the lo kimlan begavei, where we don't have such exactitude, meaning that, as Rashi says over here, that we have to assess the value of the damage, we have to make a determination of what's happening over here, we require psak halacha, there we don't act on their behalf, because then we're really acting like judges, or smuchin, which we're not entitled to do. Amre, shor b'shor, v'shor b'adam nami, lo kimlan begavei. Why is that any different by a case where one shor damages another shor, or a adam damages a shor? In that case, we also don't know exactly what the compensation or the nezek is. So if that's the case, then we also over there shouldn't be able to adjudicate those cases. Elapuk chazi, heichem is davne Torah b'shuka. What do? We ask you to go out and find out how much a shor is selling for in the shuk. Adam badam vadam b'shor nami. In that case of adam badam chavala, or a shor that damages adam, nami puk chazi heichem is davne avde b'shuka. Go see how much people are sold for in the shuk. If there all you're doing is assessing pricing based on the shuk, the same should be true in the human marketplace. So then why is this any different than the cases of shor b'shor versus the cases of adam badam? Va'od, tashlum kefu, tashlum arba'a v'chamisha, the kitzvei, when it comes to paying the penalties of four or five times, where there is a defined amount that you would pay, nabishluchutayu, why don't we act on their behalf over there? And we're again not allowed to act on their behalf. Mar says that is easy to answer. Amre kikav dina shluchutayu b'mamona. When we act on the behalf of the Beit in Yerushalayim, that's when we deal with monetary matters. Biknoso lo avdina shlichutayu. When it comes to fines, we don't act on their behalf. The likely reason is because, as we said earlier in the Masechta, that the Rashba had indicated that when it comes to chiyuv knas, the chiyuv knas doesn't happen at the moment of the nezek or the damage that's done, but rather at the time of the psak Beit in, that's what establishes the knas. And so therefore, that means it's really an act of Beit Din, and the act of Beit Din can't be carried out elo b'smuchim. And therefore, we don't deal with knasot. So now, adam b'adam d'mimonohu nevet shlichutayu. But at least when it's talking about chavalot of adam b'adam, over there, that's a monetary matter, we should be able to act on their behalf. My answer is, ki ka'avdina shlichutayu b'milta d'shchicha. We only do it with things that are commonplace. We only act on behalf of the Batei Dinim in Eretz Yisrael when it's something that happens all the time. Adam ba'adam de lo shchicha, when it talks about chavala, one person injuring another person, that's not common. Lo avdin and shlichutayu, therefore we do not act on their behalf. Mar says, wait a minute. Hare boshet u'pegam. When it comes to the assessment of embarrassment and pegam, the reduction in value to the woman from the rape or from the seduction, over there that it is shchiach, it is something that is commonplace, navid shlichutayu. We should be able to act on behalf of the Batei Dinim in Eretz Yisrael. So Gemara says, Amre hochinami. And hochinami, you can't do this. Dara papa, agve arba mezuzah de boshet. But papa himself collected 400 zuz from someone from the embarrassment that they caused to another party. Valete de la rab papa. Wait a minute. Who says that rab papa is normative halacha? That's what Rav Papa did, but we don't accept that which Rav Papa did. The Shalach le Rav Chista le Rav Nachman. Rav Chista asked Rav Nachman a question about these knasot, whether we're able to execute them in the Batei Dinim in Bavel. Shalach le Chista knasot kam gavet bin Bavel. How are you collecting knasot in Bavel? Bavel, we do not collect knasot because those are acts of Beit Din which we don't have the ability to do in Bavel. Ella. So here we reach the conclusion. Ki avdinan shluchutayu. When we act on behalf of the Batei Dinim in Eretz Yisrael, b'milta d'shchicha, That's something that is commonplace, like we mentioned before, but also v'it be'chisaron kis, that there's also monetary loss involved. I mean, that the damage that's done is real physical damage that causes a loss of money. So if you combine the real loss of money plus the frequency of the event, those are events where the Bate Dinim in Bavel will step up and do the bidding of the Bate Dinim in Eretz Yisrael. Avamilta de Shchicha, the late Bechison Kis, something that is commonplace, but it does not involve actual loss of money. For instance, Boshet, embarrassment. Embarrassment is something that might be frequent and something that needs to be addressed, but it's not necessarily involved with Chisaron Kis. There's no actual monetary loss to the individual. Inami Milta de Lo Shchicha, it's something that's not commonplace. But there is actual loss of money. In that case, the Bate Dinim in Bavel will not act on behalf of the Bate Dinim in Eretz Yisrael. And that explains what types of cases or items we will deal with and which ones we will not deal with. So therefore, Shor B'Shor, and therefore the case of Shor B'Shor, or the case of where an Adam damages the shore, those are commonplace items. There is Chisaron Kis, and therefore we will adjudicate those cases in Bavel, similar to Halvaot and Hodaot, which both also have that characteristic, which is the fact that they are both commonplace, as well as involving a Chisaron Kis. On the other hand, when you deal with Adam Ba'Adam, or Shor Ba'Adam, it might be that there is Chisaron Kis, but there is no Shchicha. These aren't common things that happen, and therefore we would not adjudicate those types of cases on behalf of the Bate Dinim in Eretz Yisrael. V'shor b'shor govin b'bavel? Wait a minute. Do we really collect for property-to-property damage in Bavel? V'amarova shor shezik ain govin oto b'bavel? That we do not collect for damages done by a shor in Bavel. Dazikman, who did the shor damage? Ilem dazik adam, if you say that he injured a person, mayri ashor dazik adam. Why are you talking about a shore that damages a person that you don't collect in Bavel? Even if another human being damages this person, we do not collect that in Bavel. Elipshita the Azik shore. It's a case where this animal damages another animal. Victoria in Govimo Tobi Bavel, that we can't adjudicate those cases or collect it in Bavel. There you're talking about a Tam. As we learned earlier in the Masechta, that Tam is Palga Nizka Knosa. That it's a form of kenas, and that's why we don't adjudicate it. It says, Ocha b'muad. Over here we're talking about a muad. In that case, you would have to make payment because it's not a kenas anymore, it's compensation. It says, V'amarova ain muad b'bavel. You can never get the case of muad in Bavel. If we're not going to adjudicate cases of tam, then you're never going to end up with cases of muad, because you have to warn the tam sufficient times in order to end up as the muad, and that you can't do in Bavel. So Amrei di'ayid hatam va'ikti lahacha. It became a mu'ad in Eretz Yisrael, and then they shipped it over to Bavel. So now you have a ready-made mu'ad shor in Bavel that does damage. And that's a case of shchiach and chisaron kis. The only problem with that is, that's not so shchiach. V'amilta de lo shchichai. It might be commonplace that a shor damages another shor, but it's not commonplace that it happens in a manner where it was mu'ad in Eretz Yisrael, and they brought it over to Bavel. In cases that are uncommon, we said before that the Bate Dinim in Bavel would not act on behalf of the Bate Dinim in Eretz Yisrael. Mar says, okay, now, this is the case. The Adur Rabban and the Hotam, you have some of the Smuchim in Eretz Yisrael come to visit Bavel via Dua, and they made it into a mu'ad. Mar says, Hacha, sof, milta de lo shchicha. You're still coming up with a scenario that's not so commonplace. What, that you have rabbis who are smuchim traveling from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, and they're making a shor into a shor muad? And Ata Martin, you already established, Miltad lo shchicha lo kaiv dina and shlichutayu. We don't act on their behalf in Bavel to the Bate Dinim of smuchim in Eretz Yisrael. Ele ki gamarova b'shein v'regel du muadim itchilataninu. He's speaking about this, he's talking about a case of shein v'regel that are muad from the start. So you don't have a problem in terms of the Bate Dinim in Bavel adjudicating these cases because it's not Knas. It is a Milta de Shchicha because we're talking about Shein and Regel, which part of their definition is Hezik and Matsui. It's something that happens on a regular basis. And therefore, in this situation, since they were already mu'adin, we would adjudicate that type of loss in Bavel, because there is chisaron kis, there's a clear loss that's here. And number two is it's a case of shchiach. These are commonplace items, and both of those would fall under that category of items that we would adjudicate in Bavel. And that's what Rava speaks about, that we do adjudicate in Bavel. Over here, the Balei Tosafot are very bothered by the structure of the Gemara, because the Gemara seems to indicate that we would not adjudicate cases of gzelot and chavalot in Bavel, because there we require mumchim, we would require that the beitim be comprised of smuchim. So Tosafot says, okay, that's nice if you want to differentiate between hodot and chavalot and gzelot and chavalot, but let me tell you something, all through Shas, we have case law which says that they were adjudicating in Bavel cases of gazlanim. And he says, not only that, today we do it all the time. We adjudicate cases that involve gazlanim. So how can we do that based on this Gemara? The Gemara itself seems to indicate here that you're not allowed to deal with gzelot and chavalot in Bavel. So Tosfot over here gives a number of answers to that. He says one possibility is to say that it's a case of tafas, where the victim grabbed the money, and now we have to adjudicate in reverse to see if they can keep the money or if they have to give it back. Even though he agrees that that is a somewhat far-fetched answer over here, because to set up all the cases, the case of the tafas, seems a little unusual. He gives a second answer, was the possibility that the person invited or subpoenaed him to go up to Eretz Yisrael, which the Gemara notes in a number of places that if he subpoenas him to go up to Eretz Yisrael and refuses, then the Babylonian courts can intercede on behalf of the other individual because he invited him to go up there to show and deal with it in front of Smuchim. When the other party refuses, then the Bati Dinim in Bavel can intercede. That's another possible answer of how we deal with Gzelot or how we are adjudicating these cases of Gzelot. Tosfot gives a third answer, which is the Yesh Mefarshim, the Daf Gzelot Sheyadei Chavalot, that the cases that we don't adjudicate in Bavel are only gzelot that are a derivative of a chavala. So those cases we will not deal with. But if it's just plain, straight up gzelot, that looks more like hodot and havot, and we will be done dine gzelot. The other two possible answers that you give for that is that the parties that are being adjudicated between in Bavel, or the cases that we do adjudicate in Bavel, are not only cases which we have permission for the courts to do, but also cases by which the parties agree to a binding arbitration, in a sense. That the courts in Bavel are not acting as courts, but rather as arbitrators. And therefore, when both parties accept upon themselves the courts in Bavel, then it becomes a case of arbitration, not a case of hachra or psak halacha. And that's how we adjudicate those cases of gzelot. The other possibility is that we have to keep rule of law and law and order. And therefore, the Ramban suggests that maybe there is this extrajudicial power that is given to the courts to act not as courts, but rather enforcers of the civil law or to keep order. And therefore, anybody who lives there lives under a social contract that understands that the Batei Dinim will be empowered to act in these situations in order to maintain law and order. If we can never adjudicate the cases of gzelot, then you can have rampant theft because nobody's going to think they're going to get caught or prosecuted for these items. So you have to create deterrence. You have to create a system by which these people will be punished in these situations. So therefore, we do allow the Batei Dinim to deal with them, even though technically they should not be, or they're not doing the shlichut of the Dayanim smuchim. But it has the same weight, or as if you have permission from the smuchim to adjudicate these cases in order to maintain law and order. Now, in terms of the hodot and halvaot, they'll deal with this more extensively in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, but the reason why they were allowed to prosecute the cases of hodot and halvaot was in order to maintain liquidity in the market, and that people would be unwilling to lend money if they knew they could never bring their case to court. So therefore, we have to have an ability to bring the case to court or to adjudicate those cases in order for there to be liquidity in the market and an economically viable economy. And so in order to facilitate that, we allow, despite the need for smuchim in the cases of hodot v'halvaot, we waive that necessity in order to facilitate a better marketplace. Therefore, gzelot might fall under that same category or rubric, which is that if you don't prosecute gzelot, then nobody's going to be willing either to lend money or to be involved in such an economy. So now the Gemara continues and says, based on the Mishnah, Tsar, how do we assess Tsar? Kiva'o b'shipud u'masmer. He burnt his fingernail with a spit or with a nail, whether it means it was poked it with the nail or burnt it with the nail. Where there it is, Tsar shalo b'makom nezek mishtalim. So that what our Mishnah is indicating, that when you have pain and there's no nezek, you still have to make compensation for that tsar. Where it says, Mantana, who's the author of that position in our Mishnah? Amarova ben Azayi. It's ben Azayi because we have a machloket here between Rabbi and ben Azayi. The Tanya, Rabbi Omer kvia nemra tchila. Ben Azayi Omer chabura nemra tchila. They argue about what is written first. It's very clear in the psukim what is written first, because the psukim say kvia tachat kvia. Petza tachat patza, chabura tachat chabura, the kviya is written first. But rather, by my kamiflugate, what is the machlok between them? Rebbe savar kviya delet be chabura mashma. The default statement, when you talk about a burn is a burn without damage to the individual. It's simply the pain without any physical or permanent damage to the individual. Therefore, afterwards, the Gemara Kotov Rachmana, the pasuk says, chabura ligluyela. To tell you about that, that kviya d'it bechabura in, d'ilo, lo, that only a case of tsar that involves also nezek, will you have to pay for the tsar. But if there is no nezek, then there is no tsar. That's what the additional chabura comes to teach you afterwards. The kviya would have naturally, or as default, would have assumed that there is no chabura here. Therefore, the extra word chabura afterwards comes to teach you, no, 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 kviya is only in a case where it is also a chabura. That kviya by itself means a burn that involves both pain and nezek. Katav Rachmana chabura. Then when the Torah writes chabura afterwards, the gluye Allah, to tell you the kviya delei pei chabura, to tell you even a burn without damage is also chayav. And then Ben Azai would be the author of our Mishnah by the fact that he says that you are chayav in a case of a burn without damage. Matki flora papa adarabo. Rav Papa says, wait a minute, it should be just the opposite. Ipcho mistabro. Just the opposite makes sense. Rashi notes over here, that is for two reasons that the opposite makes sense. The first of which is that Rabbi should be the author of the position that fits into our Mishnah, because Rabbi is the misader of Mishnah, and if Rabbi is going to have a machloket ben Azayi, it makes sense that Rabbi's position would be found in the Mishnah, not ben Azayi's. That's number one. Number two is the language used by Rabbi and ben Azayi. According to the way that we just learned it, they were telling us what the Havamina would have been. And that's the nature of the language. Ipcho mistabra is that it makes more sense for them to be describing to us what the conclusion is, rather than what the Havamina is. And therefore, the opposite would be true. Rabbi Omer, kviya nemra tchila, savar, he holds kviya dit bechabura mashma, that the natural default state of a kviya means tsar, pain, along with a damage. Then the pasuk comes along and says, that the kviya earlier in the pasuk is a case of kviya of a burn or tsar without a chabura in it. And you're chayav independently for tsar, irrespective of whether there is damage that is there, if there's a chabura or not. And that would then make Rabbi the author of the position or Mishnah. Ben Azayi Omer, chabura nemra tchila. Chabura is said first. Sabar kviya delet pe chabura mashma. That a kviya by itself means a kviya without damage. Therefore, katav rachmana chabura ligluyela. And that's what it means, chabura tchila. That the Torah wrote chabura to teach us the din, that chabura is the only way. Kviya deitpe chabura in. If the burn has damage with it, then you pay for the tsar. Ilolo, if not, not. Va'maskona kaime. And therefore, their statements are statements about what they think the conclusion is, not what they think the havamin is. Inami, or the other possibility to explain the machloket here between Rabbi and Ben Azayi is this. The kuliyama kviya ben deit bechabura ben deit bechabura. Kviya is an ambiguous term. It means a burn whether there is damage or whether there is no damage that is done there. There's pain for sure, pain without damage or pain with damage. It means both of those items. V'holcha bichlalu pratam ruchuakim zemizeka miflege. They're arguing here about when you have a klal and then a prat that are distant from each other. Remember, in the 10 principles of klalu prat, ein b'chlal ala mashipa prat. The detailed item defines what is in the general statement. So now you have kvi'ah. Kviyah is a general statement because Kviyah means tsar, irrespective of whether there is a chabura or not. So Kviyah becomes the klal. Afterwards, later on, you have chabura. Chabura is a prat that tells you only a kviyah or pain or burning that is associated with damage, that is considered to be tsar that you would pay for. So the chabura is qualifying the word kviyah. So now, if I had kviyah and then chabura, that would be a klalu prat, and that would mean that the chabura is defining the klal. The only problem here in these psukim is that they're not actually adjacent to each other. It says kviyah tachat kviyah, then petza tachat potza, which interrupts, and then chabura tachat chabura. So you have the klal of kviyah and the prat of chabura separated from each other. And that is the machloket. Rabbi Savar ain dani noto beklalu prat. Rabbi believes you don't dan it like a klalu prat, and therefore, you have both items. You have a kviyah with a chabura and kviyah without a chabura, and you're chayav for both. Ben azay savar dani noto beklalu prat. You do dan, even though they're separated from each other, you still are dan them beklalu prat. So therefore, the chabura defines the tsar. And that's why he thinks you are only chayav when there's a chabura, but not chayav when it's just the tsar by itself. Tosfot over here says that this idea of a klalu prat muhakim is not just an open book. You can do this anywhere in the Torah. It says near the re the klalu prat muhakim zemizet the plige tanai hocha behind udavka bechadin yono. That's only if they're all topically similar. Aval betray inyanei the kulim ayin damin. If you're in two different inyanim, it's clear that we would not be done even if they're when they're far apart. So you need something that binds them together in some fashion here, which is at least that they're of the similar topic and they're in the same section of the Torah. But you can't just pick up a klal here and a prat there and then say, oh, klal prat meruchakim, we are done. That we do not say. Now the Gemara says, according to Rabbi, who says that we aren't done the klal prat over here, then chitema chabura la Rabbi lamali. What does he need the word chabura for at all? Because we already have the word kviyah telling you that you pay for pain, whether there is damage or there isn't damage, then what does the word chabura add? The Gemara says, it adds on the damim yiterim, for the extra monetary compensation that you have to make. Rashi claims over here is to teach you that you pay for tsar even in the face of a chabura. You might have thought that you pay for pain when pain is alone, and you pay for a chabura when a chabura is alone. But you don't pay for both, pain and damage. And therefore, the word chabura comes to teach you that, yes, you pay for pain, and when there's damage, you also pay for the chabura, that the damage is there. As the Rashi says, k'mashalan d'mishalem tarvayu, that you pay for both of them. Tosafot does not accept Rashi's explanation over here, and says, v'ein niradari, he says that he doesn't think that that makes any sense, because the fact that you paid tsar, but makum nezek, nafkalami petza tachat patza. The Gemara learns in other places from petza tachat patza that you pay nezek and tsar. Meaning that the fact that you paid both items doesn't come out of chabura, it comes out of the words petza tachat patza. And so you don't need the chabura to teach you that. But therefore, near the read, the dami mitarim shemeshleim bitzar sheesh bo roshim. Yotarmi bitzar sheein bo roshim. Meaning that pain also comes in different forms. There's pain that is pain, but there's also pain that involves a longer lasting, we'll call it a scar or impact on the individual. And therefore over here, you would pay not only for the pain, but the pain and the long lasting marking that happens to this individual. Therefore, there is more tsar that is associated with something that has a roshim than tsar shembo roshim, even though there's no nezek over here, but there is some sort of scarring or permanent damage, physical or appearance damage that is there. So, even though there's no more physical pain in that case, but nevertheless, he has to pay more for the fact that there is a scar that is left there, or there's more permanence to the damage that is done from that pain that he underwent. Even though the physical pain was the same, there's still residual pain or psychological pain that is associated there that you'd have to pay for, and that's what the chabura comes to teach you. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Pehei Amud Aleph.